Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting through our studios in New York City. This is going to be an empowering hour. No guest today. I will be having a guest, pick a couple of guests for the Progressive Commentary Hour, the most listened to, downloaded, and shared program that I do of the 15 hours live each week. I know a lot of people are not able to always be in front of a radio or a computer. More and more people are finding that it's easier just to listen over the telephone. That's especially true at this time for all of my KPFK audience for the last 30 years. They are listening now over the telephone. That number, so no matter where you're at, in Canada or North America, you can call 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. Today, I'm going to be opening our lines so that we'll have more opportunity for you to call in. But we have a lot to share before we get there. So let's begin always on the latest health issues. Now, as many of you know, in more than 667 separate articles, 300 original investigative reports, 58 major cover stories for national publication, programs, investigations that were featured on 60 Minutes and 2020 on Dr. Lawrence Burton, Dr. Stanislaw Brzezinski, I have challenged the foundation of virtually all American medicine, that American medicine does not have the right to determine that only one model is usable. And yet right now, that's exactly what they're doing. They call anyone who challenges them quacks. As a result, people are not allowed to offer homeopathy, even chiropractic, for dozens of years without being considered non-scientific, of no value. Well, in point of fact, when I visited the American Cancer Society and I spoke with the head of their unproven methods of cancer management list, he showed me what he called his quack list. And he had criteria, 10 primary criteria, but additional criteria. But the 10 criteria were that if these people have any of these qualifications, then they're a quack. For example, he said, if they're promising secret cures, okay, I would agree with that. Then he said, if they're not a legitimate medical doctor or PhD, okay. You mean if you're calling yourself a medical doctor and you're not from a license, no, that I would agree with that. And that your care, your therapy is very expensive, and that you haven't published in scientific literature, of credible literature, and you haven't presented before scientific institutions. Those were the kind of things. But indeed, every single person that I was investigating had those qualifications, meaning they had were medical doctors, published in peer-reviewed literature, presented before scientific institutions. Their therapies were dirt cheap. And they were effective, proven by outside researchers. So they met no criteria for being quacks, yet they were kept on the quack list. And that's the way virtually all of American medicine has worked. An elitist group of individuals who I'm sure in their own minds and hearts became doctors and continue to do so because they believe that they can help people. But that doesn't mean that they are. In fact, 4 years ago, I published a study, and then it became a book. And it was distributed to every media in America, 7,000 members of the media, every single member of Congress, every single state legislator in every 50 states. Everyone got this information. It had been vetted by six independent physicians and scientists specializing in research and research methodology. We only used peer-reviewed official statistics. So if we were talking about heart disease and its treatments and lack of efficacy, it came from the American College of Cardiology. If it was on surgery, the American College of Surgeons, the American College of Radiology, Oncology, Gastroenterology, Psychiatry and Neurology. So we were only using their official literature, their accepted statistics. The difference is no one had ever put it all together. So when you put it all together and you added up all the numbers, the number one cause of preventable death was American medicine. The number one cause of injury was American medicine. And it had been that way for the previous 20 years. And it is so today, but not a word is said about it, which is one of the reasons I'm extremely concerned about Obamacare. I'm concerned about Obamacare on many levels, and I've shared this with you in depth and done whole analysis of it. First, it was never meant to be something that really helped the American public. It was created by a consortium under Hillary Clinton. Remember, this is the original Clinton plan. It's just been redesigned. It was meant for the insurance companies to make hundreds of billions of dollars a year in extra profit, the pharmaceutical companies to sell more drugs by having more standardized tests, more people, compulsory medical treatment. So that's what it was about, all right? Plain and simple. So when we look at their figures, we see that American medicine, except for emergency care, which is exemplary, absolutely. If you have an accident, if you have a severed finger, if you have a gouged out eye, if you have a broken tooth, if you have a heart attack or a stroke, if you have an infection, we're good at helping you in critical, life-threatening care or trauma. Kudos for that. But that's only about 12% of medicine. That means that 88% fails miserably. But it's the biggest industry in the world. Let me tell you how big medical care is in the United States. If you put all of energy, oil, gas, nuclear together, all of housing together, it dwarfs it in any given year. This year, $3 trillion. Now, wouldn't you imagine it's something that cost us, the American public, $3 trillion that kills more people than all of American casualties in the First and Second World War combined every single year? You think that maybe someone would make that a priority, wouldn't you? Someone, somewhere. I never received a single feedback except from a simple recognition by Senator Lautenberg of New Jersey. He said, thank you for sending the information. I will review it. I never heard from another human being. Now, how is it possible that you send something that is so devastating, so specific, so documented, so scholarly, so right on, so relevant, so essential to our well-being? It's life and death. You make a mistake and you get on expensive chemotherapy. You're not talking about something that's $5,000 and whoops, we made a mistake, but go home and get better. You're talking about $200,000 going broke and dying. No one takes credit for filling more bodies in morgues than anything else. 550,000 Americans will die this year of cancer. They will all have taken officially accepted, fully recognized orthodox therapy. No one will take responsibility. They died gallantly, we're told. Doctors were heroic. But what point after 50 years, 40 of them on official war on cancer, do you realize you've got the wrong protocols, you're with the wrong design, but everybody's profiting, and how quiet people come when they're rewarded for failure? Because reputations, institutions, fundings are all based upon keeping the public in the idea that we're doing something right when we're doing something wrong. Hence, from Mike Bundren, Natural News, how to spot a medical quack, the top 10 signs. Here's what we could ask them today. We've been brainwashed into believing medical quackery is legitimate when it's attacking alternative or complementary medicine. Number one, this is how you spot a orthodox medical quack. He prescribes medication without testing you for anything. Doctors are big on scientific evidence. They demand that millions of dollars be poured into research to prove that things work. Yet, when you visit their office, they don't often gather any verifiable evidence on what they are doing to treat you. Now, isn't that interesting? You spend a few moments with a man or woman who prescribes powerful medication to mess with your neurotransmitters, no test, not even a questionnaire. You bring your kid to a pediatrician and leave a few minutes later with powerful brain stimulants for ADHD, and the doc never once tests for anything. Why? There are no tests. Quacks don't know of any test for many of the conditions for which they regularly prescribe medication. Well, so if they're prescribing all this medication and not testing, and there's no proof that it works for any given patient, then that's quackery. Number two, he tells you it's all in your head. Really? Telling you that your real symptoms are all in your head, translating, he thinks you're nuts, means that the answers are not in his head. When quacks don't have the answer, they don't consider that there is anything for them to learn. They just blame you. Nice. A legitimate practitioner will admit when he doesn't know something and commit to finding solutions by expanding his knowledge or working with other practitioners on your case who may shed fresh light on the subject. Even getting opinions from people who are complementary or alternative practitioners. Hey, I'm a licensed clinical oncologist. I use chemotherapy. I don't know anything about homeopathy and zeolites. I don't know anything about vitamin C drips, but you do, doctor. You've treated patients. Can you now share with me how you would approach this patient? Here she's got a adeno, and suddenly you get feedback. That never happens. Never. He denies the role of lifestyle, nutrition, and stress. Oh, do I know that all so well? Isn't it interesting when we turn around and look behind us, important issues of the day, how many times were we right when we predicted stress, environmental pollution, pesticides, DDT, aldrin, heptachlor, electromagnetic pulses in cell phones, computers, the effects of caffeine on our biological clocks and on our stomach acids causing GERD? We were there. They were not. Sorry, I'm in an environment that I'm on the road, so when I'm in an environment, I can't always control the background. So when noises like that go off, I hope you appreciate and understand that we just have to hope that it stops and I can continue on so we don't have noise background. In any case, your doctor won't ask you if you're eating donuts or if you're camping out on the couch, if you're drinking booze. To their mind, this has nothing to do with your disease. In their mind, just take your pills. Nowadays, some quacks are conceding that diet and lifestyle have something to do with possibly the onset of disease, only a small percentage. But they're still not talking to you about it. How often have they ever mentioned what it means to have a critically evaluated diet, exercise, and de-stress plan? They don't ask you how to eat, sleep, and manage your stress. It's because quack doctors don't know much about these things. When practitioners do not know much about the cause of 90% disease, well, I call that a scam. Next, he'll put you on medication roller coaster. Wow, have we seen this so many times? Some unfortunate folks, after dealing with a quack that doesn't know what he is doing, end up on 10 to 20 pharmaceutical medications and have lost touch with what it's like to feel normal. They live in a world of symptoms and side effects, and for some reason, keep going back for more. The quacks respond by continuing to dish it out, but he has no idea how these medications are interacting with each other because there's never been any studies. There's no study out there of what happens when you're on 14 different medications and you're a senior citizen. None. You become the guinea pig. And if there's a problem, you're blamed, not them. And then you have the idea his own health is a mess. Walk your talk. Does your doctor do it? If he or she are examples of true healing and true health, good. If not, then they not be even know what genuine health feels like. How's he going to get there? Doctors among the most stressed out and suicidal populations on earth. Well, They work busy schedules and they're under a lot of duress. Yes. Still, there's no excuse. We're all stressed. Doctors are supposed to be examples. They are not. And then, do they involve you in your own treatment? So you heard that this or that lab test might be worth doing. You read an article or did some of your own research. Is your doctor interested? You say, doctor, I was listening to Gary Null, and he was talking about how important it is for you to do certain research, that you found out that you could get better if you did a detox where you were juicing and laying off all the refined carbs. Is that true or not? And the doctor should be able to say, well, let me look into that. I find that interesting. I mean, there's nothing wrong. It can only help you. But do they? And also, when a doctor doesn't involve you in your own healing process, what does that tell you? It tells you that he believes you cannot heal, but he treats you anyway. Ask him, can you cure depression? Can you cure bipolar? Can you cure ADHD? Can you cure arthritis? Can you cure the heart disease? They'll say no, but we can manage it. But there's a whole field of complementary medicine that actually cures these things. And also, how often are the communication skills just pathetic? Hi, Doc. I'm here with my mom. What does it show? Well, she has 6 months to live. Nothing more we can do. Take her home. Get her life in order. And that's it. She thanks Doc for the compassion. What class did you get that from in medical school? You know you're with a quack if they spend less than 15 minutes with you. Recent research shows that new doctors are spending less time than ever with patients. An average, 8 minutes. Let me repeat that. 8 minutes. This is not headed in the right direction. This is your health, the most precious gift you have. You need quality time with a physician. 8 minutes is not enough time. And so let's translate this. What's a takeaway moment? We'll give you all the time you want if we're paid by the hour. But because of this system, we're paid by the visit. So this visit is short. You're out of time. Money before patience. That equals quackery. I'm Gary Null. That's the latest on health and nutrition. We'll take a brief break and come back. And then I'm going to do a series of commentaries and then open it up for talk back. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone? I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Null on the road, broadcasting through our studios, Progressive Radio Network, which I'm happy to say has hit some new milestones and listeners, people sharing our progressive articles from those men and women throughout the world who are doing something positive to help us go forward in all areas of our life. And we post about 50 to 100 different articles every 24 hours. Used to be people would go to Huffington Post, but then they became very corporatized, Democrat, and the Drudge Report. But we're the ones who share without a political bias, a religious bias. We share simply the best information you can find. And you can go to progressiveradionetwork.com to download for free all of those articles. And please share them with other people. And full films as well. Commentary time now. This is from Mike Snyder. And he says the following. Surveys prove that a large chunk of the population is made up of totally clueless citizens. Here's what he said. Quote, are we too stupid to continue as a nation? Now, that may seem like a harsh question, but I think that it is one that we need to ask. Even though we have more access to information today than ever before, it seems like the U.S. population just keeps becoming more ignorant. So at what point does a society become so dumbed down it can no longer function effectively? We like to complain about our leaders, but the truth is that we are the ones who elected them. They are a reflection of who we are as a society. And when you compare Barack Obama and Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi and John Boehner to men like George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, they don't fare very well. Sadly, the truth is that most of our founding fathers would not have a prayer of being elected today. Instead, they would have been labeled as crazy extremist for insisting that we follow the U.S. Constitution. In our entertainment-addicted society, Lady Gaga would have a much better chance of being elected president today than George Washington would. That's how far we have fallen. Perhaps you think that I'm being overly pessimistic. Perhaps you think I should have more faith in the American people. Well, consider some evidence. The following are from some surveys which prove that a large chunk of the population is made up of totally clueless people. Example, a survey found that 56% of Americans believe that it's okay for the government to track, quote, the telephone records of millions of Americans in order to keep us safe. Apparently, those people never heard of the Fourth Amendment. When Bush was president, 61% of Democrats considered the National Security Agency's surveillance to be, quote, unacceptable. But now that Obama's in the White House, only 34% of them consider it to be unacceptable. 67% of Americans support the use of unmanned drones and homeland security missions inside the United States. What's next? Will there be security robots that stand in the corner and watch us as we eat dinner with our families? Close to one-third of all Americans are willing to submit to a TSA body cavity search in order to fly. That means, in simple language, but honest and frank, that they could have you bend, squat, check your vagina, check in your anus, to see whether or not you are safe to fly. And yet, one-third of people said they would submit to that. 20% of all government workers and 26% of all Obama supporters consider the Tea Party to be, quote, the biggest terror threat that America is facing. Really? 89.7% of Americans believe that they are eating a healthy diet. Hello? 36% of all Americans are obese and over 50% are overweight. So, but yet they think it's healthy. 29% of Americans believe that cloud computing involves actual clouds. One survey found 40% of all Americans unaware that Obamacare is the law. The average American watches 28 hours of television every week. And also, from National Geographic, only 37% of all Americans between the ages of 18 and 24 could find the nation of Iraq on a map. Close to 25%, one quarter of all Americans, did not know that the United States declared independence from Great Britain. We're the most doped up nation in the history of the planet. And the Mayo Clinic found that 70% of all Americans are on at least one prescription drug. 20% of Americans are on at least five prescription drugs. According to one survey, 24% of all U.S. teens had a sexually transmitted disease. Approximately one out of every five teenage girls actually wants to be a teenage mother. And 51% of all Americans agreed with the statement, quote, it is necessary to give up civil liberties in order to make the country safe from terrorism. 51% said it's okay. According to a Bloomberg survey, only 16% of Americans believe the Federal Reserve should be abolished. 29% of all Americans don't know the name of the Vice President of the United States. They're not missing anything there. Alfred E. Newman, isn't that? Who's? So that gives you an idea of just some of the problems. Now, from that, we go to Paul Craig Roberts. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts is becoming one of the country's most outspoken progressive leaders. Now, mind you, at one time, he was on the inside of that Washington, that whole Washington dynamic, Beltway politic. He was Undersecretary of the Treasury in Ronald Reagan. He wrote a commentary entitled, Washington's Driving the World to the Final War. I'll quote it, and we have it published up on our site today. If you, an American living in superpower America, lack the courage to stand up to the evil that is your government, perhaps the courage of Edward Snowden, Bradley Manning, Julian Assange, and tiny Ecuador will give you heart. A U.S. Senator from New Jersey, Robert Mendez, the Democrat chairman of the Foreign Intelligence Relations Committee, told the Ecuadorian government that he would block the import of vegetables and flowers from Ecuador if Ecuador gives asylum to Edward Snowden. The cost to Ecuador would be about $1 billion in lost revenues. Mendez's statement, quote, our government will not reward countries for bad behavior, end quote, is ironic. It equates bad behavior with protecting a truth teller and good behavior with betraying a truth teller. Mendez's statement is also a lie. The U.S. government only rewards bad behavior. The U.S. government consistently rewards those who conspire against the elected governments of their own countries, setting them up as dictators when Washington overthrows the elected governments. Mendez's threat did not work, but the senator did succeed in delivering yet another humiliating blow to the Washington prestige. The Ecuadorian president, Rafael Carrera, beat Mendez to the punch and canceled the trade pact with U.S. on the grounds that the pact was a threat to the sovereignty of Ecuador and immoral principles and was being used by Washington to blackmail Ecuador. Quote, Ecuador doesn't accept pressure or threats from anyone. End quote. Washington exposed with its hand in the cookie jar, devouring the privacy of the entire world and prevented by hubris from acknowledging its illegal behavior and apologizing, has so mishandled the Snowden affair that Washington has done far more damage to itself than occurred from Snowden's revelations. Washington has proven conclusively that it has no respect for anyone, human rights, that it has no respect for any country's sovereignty, that it has no respect for any moral principles, especially those it most often mouths, and that it relies on coercion and violence alone. The rest of the world knows who is its real enemy. Washington's press, by helping Washington demonize Snowden, Glenn Greenwald, Manning, Assange, and Ecuador, have demonstrated to the world that the U.S. media is devoid of integrity and that nothing it reports can be believed. The U.S. print and TV and national public radio comprise a ministry of propaganda for Washington's immoral agendas. On June 24th, the Stasi state's favorite whore, the Washington Post, denounced three times democratically elected Rafael Carrera as, quote, the autocratic leader of tiny, impoverished Ecuador, end quote, without realizing that this editorial not only demonstrated the Washington Post's lack of any ethics whatsoever, but also showed the entire world that if, quote, tiny, impoverished Ecuador can stand up to Washington's threats, so can the rest of the world. President Carrera replied that the Washington Post, quote, managed to focus attention on Snowden and on the wicked countries that support him, making us forget the terrible things against the U.S. people and the whole world that he denounced. Carrera added that, quote, Washington's world order isn't only unjust, it's immoral. The reason Washington hates Carrera has nothing to do with Snowden. The Ecuador is considered asylum for Snowden is just an excuse. Carrera is hated because in the second year of his first term, he repudiated the $3 billion foreign debt that corrupt and despotic prior regimes had been paid to contract with international finance. Carrera's default threat forced the international financial gangsters to write down the debt by 60%. Washington also hates Carrera because he has successfully reduced the high rates of poverty in Ecuador, thus building public support that makes it difficult for Washington to overthrow him from within. Yet another reason Washington hates Carrera is because he took steps against the multinational oil companies exploiting Ecuador's oil resources and limited the amount of offshore deposits in the country's banks in order to block Washington's ability to destabilize Ecuador's financial system. Washington also hates Carrera for refusing to renew Washington's lease on the air base in Manta. Essentially, Carrera has fought to take control of Ecuador's government, media, and national resources out of Washington's hands and the hands of the small, rich elite allied with Washington. It is a David versus Goliath story. In other words, Carrera, like Venezuela Chavez, is the rare foreign leader who represents the interests of his own country instead of Washington's interest. Washington uses various corrupt NGOs and the puppet government in Colombia as weapons against Carrera and the Ecuadorian government. Many believe this is only a matter of time before Washington succeeds in assassinating him. American patriots who feel that they should be on their government side, regardless of the facts, would do well to remember what true patriotism is. For Americans, patriotism has always meant alliance to the Constitution, not to the government. The oath is to defend the Constitution against enemies, domestic and foreign. The Bush and Obama regimes have proven themselves to be the Constitution's worst enemies. It is not possible for a true patriot to support a government that destroys the Constitution. The United States is a constitution. Our country is not the Obama regime, the Bush regime, or some other administration. Our country is the Constitution. The Constitution is our country. Beyond obligation to one's own country, all humans have a responsibility to human life itself. Washington's puppet states, such as the NATO countries, Japan and Colombia, by providing cover and support for Washington's aggression, are enabling Washington to drive the world into World War III. In conclusion, the temptation of Washington's money easily overwhelms weak characters such as Tony Blair and David Cameron of England. But the governments of NATO countries and other accommodating states are not only selling out their own peoples by supporting Washington's war of aggression, they're selling out humanity. Washington's hubris and arrogance grows as Washington bumps off country after country. Sooner or later, Russia and China will realize they themselves are targets and will draw firmer lines. Arrogance will prevent Washington from acknowledging the lines, and the final war will be launched. Washington's power impulse is driving the world to destruction. The people of the world should realize this and force their government to stop enabling Washington's aggression. End quote. And that was from Professor Paul Craig Roberts. One more, and then we will take your calls. And this comes from... This is from Washington blog. The government spying has always focused on crushing dissent, not on keeping us safe. I thought this was really important because no one talks about this. I'll quote this. Top terrorism experts say that mass spying on Americans does not keep us safe. High-level American government officials have warned for 40 years that mass surveillance would lead to tyranny. They've warned that the government is using information gained through mass surveillance in order to go after anyone, anywhere, that they dislike. And a lieutenant colonel from the Stasi, East Germany's terrorizing security state, based upon his experience, agrees. You don't have to obsess on the National Security Agency's high-tech spying to figure out what the government is doing. Just look at old-fashioned, low-tech government spying to see what's really going on. Instead of focusing on catching actual terrorists, police spy on Americans who criticize the government, or the big banks, or other power players. Todd Gitlin, chair of the PhD program in communications at Columbia University and a professor of journalism and sociology, notes, quote, under the Freedom of Information Act, the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund has unearthed documents showing that last year the Department of Homeland Security and other federal agencies were busy surveying and worrying about a good number of Occupy groups during the very time that they were missing actual warnings about actual terrorist actions. From its beginnings, the Occupy movement was of considerable interest to the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and other law enforcement intelligence agencies. While true terrorists were slipping past the nets they cast in the wrong places. In the fall of 2011, the Department of Homeland Security specifically asked its regional affiliates to report on, quote, peaceful activist demonstrations in addition to reporting on domestic terrorist acts and significant criminal activity. Aware that Occupy was overwhelmingly peaceful, the federal-funded Boston Regional Intelligence Center, one of 77 coordinated centers known generally as fusion centers, was busy monitoring Occupy Boston every day, 24/7. As the investigative journalist Michael Iskoff recently reported, they were not only tracking Occupy and looking and reading all their Facebook pages and websites, but writing reports on the movement's potential impact on, quote, commercial and financial sector assets, meaning big business. It was in this period that the FBI received the second of the two Russian police warnings about the extremist Islamist activities of the brothers, the future Boston Marathon bombers. That city's police commissioner later testified that the federal authorities did not pass any information at all about the brothers on to him, though there was no point in letting the Boston police off the hook either. The ACLU has uncovered documents showing that during the same period, they were paying close attention to the internal workings of Code Pink, as well as Veterans for Peace. But it's not just there. In Alaska, Alabama, Florida, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Wisconsin, intelligence was not only pooled among public law enforcement agencies, but shared with private corporations. And private corporations then shared with the police and with the Homeland Security who they were interested in. So let's get this clear. Citibank, J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, Goldman Sachs was working hand in hand with Homeland Security so it could target individuals or groups that were writing or saying anything or demonstrating that could adversely affect their profits. But also, when the government came up with anything, they would share it with them. Government-private partnerships. That's fascism. Nationally, the FBI and Department of Homeland Security were, in the words of Martha Hilliard, executive director of the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund, quote, treating protests against the corporate and banking structure of America's potential criminal and terrorist activity. Last December, Freedom of Information Act, 112 pages of documents, heavily redacted, revealed a good deal of evidence for what might otherwise seem like an outlandish charge that federal authorities were, quote, functioning as de facto intelligence arms of Wall Street and corporate America. Consider these examples, and then they list 20 pages of examples. I mean, example after example. For example, I'll just give you two. The FBI in Albany and Syracuse Joint Terrorism Task Force disseminated information to 22 campus police officials, a representative of the State University of New York in Oswego, contacted the FBI for information on Occupy Wall Street protests, reported the FBI on the SUNY Oswego Occupy encampment made up of students and professors. An entity called the Domestic Security Alliance Council, a strategic partnership between the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and the private sector, sent around information regarding Occupy protest at West Coast ports, quote, to raise awareness concerning this type of criminal activity. And there are 22 other pages everywhere in America where anyone was protesting, in every state, at every college campus, anywhere. It was completely infiltrated by the police, by federal agencies. If you protest in America today, you're not just considered a criminal, you're on a terrorist list. There's no distinction. That's how bad it's become. That's why I'm concerned. So I've been talking about fascism, state police activities, the working of corporate America, and using our Homeland Security and its private contracting agencies, where many of the people running those contracting agencies frequently worked for corporate America and then go in governmental agencies, they get a revolving door. So now, what if you want to protest something? What, for example, if you're a union member and you want to, rightly so, have a challenge to how your pensions are being used, and so you call for a demonstration in front of the hedge fund that is handling your pensions? Within minutes, your group will be photographed and filmed. There'll be audio tracking devices, so every word said by anyone, all facial recognition technology will be used. You'll have infiltrators and provocateurs. You, a peaceful union grievance demonstration, is now considered an act of terrorism. Writing an article critical of anyone in corporate America or the government, that is now going to be looked at and cataloged and reviewed as a threat. So anyone today who says anything at all in any form that could negatively impact any governmental agency or any corporation, you're now in the terrorist web. You have not heard anyone at all in mainstream media go this far, but it is the truth. When I told you that your phones are being listened to, your emails read, it was 2 years ago. Now suddenly people wake up. You have no idea how many hundreds of emails. Oh, gee whiz, Gary, you were right. You know, yeah, well, this is the kind of right you don't want to be. So just beware how bad it's gone. But we're going to continue to give you the truth of all this every day. And that's why our audience is growing exponentially. And finally, after this, we are going to go to our phones. I'm going to give you just a short commentary. And two things. First, are you aware that your medical records are now being given to private corporations? It's correct. Alliance for Natural Health. Quote, your private medical records are being sold to drug companies. Hospitals and other medical organizations are supposed to be bound by the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act to keep medical records private. Patient information that is shared is supposed to be stripped of key information. And however, privacy legislation is riddled with loopholes, so many that it is estimated that over 800,000 organizations can access your records. Let me state that again. 800,000 organizations can get a hold of your medical records because of the loopholes that the lobbyists got into these legislative acts. Wouldn't you know that? So let's say that you had a good case of gonorrhea and you went to a hospital. You got it treated. You're over it. Think of the people now who could get that information on you. And finally, from Stephen Ledman from Global Research, America's Deplorable Human Records, here's what he says, quote, far and away, American human rights record is the worst. No other nation approaches its unprincipled history. Earlier crimes against humanity were largely internal and regional. 20th century ones went global. New millennia ones elevated atrocities and other human rights abuses to an unprecedented level. It keeps rising. America's guilty of virtually every crime imaginable and then some. Former dovish U.S. diplomat and advisor and father of the Soviet containment, George Kennan, explained what reflects America's post-World War II foreign and domestic policy. His February 1948 memo, PPS-23, said, quote, we have 50% of the world's wealth, but only 6% of its population. The object of envy and resentment, our real task in the coming period is to devise a pattern of relationships that let us maintain this position of disparity without positive detriment to our national society, end quote. To do this, we will have to dispense with all this sentimentality and daydreaming, and our attention will have to be concentrated everywhere on our immediate national objectives. We need not deceive ourselves that we can afford today the luxury of altruism and world benefaction. We should dispense with the aspiration to be liked or to be regarded as the repository of a high-minded international altruism. We should stop talking about unreal objectives such as human rights, the raising of the living standard in democracy. The day is not far off when we are going to have to deal with straight power concepts, lest we are hammered by idealistic slogans, ideas and practices that better. End quote. Ravaging one nation after another followed. America today wages multiple direct and proxy wars. U.S. military bases infest the world. CIA elements operate everywhere. U.S. special forces perform various military-related services globally. Wherever they show up, they're killers, not protectors. Domestically, America is more battleground than homeland. FBI, CIA, NSA, FEMA, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Border Patrol, and other federal agencies work jointly with state and local authorities against the interest of most U.S. residents. Anyone can be arrested, charged, prosecuted, and imprisoned for any reason, and none at all, by presidential dictate. Any U.S. citizen at home or abroad can be murdered. Others can be arrested and detained indefinitely, uncharged, in military prisons. Innocence is no defense. State terrorism is policy at home and abroad. That's how police states operate. Freedom, human rights, and other democratic values are non-starters. Supporting what's right is hazardous. Challenging Washington's right to dominate globally risks prosecution or death. America is unfit and unsafe to live in. And that's Stephen Ledlin. His final sentence, en route to institutionalizing total police control, it's fast approaching. No one is safe anymore for good reason. Humanity is at risk. America's agenda reflects unchallenged dominance, no matter the cost. Truth is the most dangerous disinfectant. Suppressing it is policy. Propaganda wars precede hot ones. Human rights and civil liberties are denied for their own good. Patriotism means going along or else. End quote, Stephen Ledlin. Your turn. Let's say hello to Harvey from Berkeley. Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for the show today. And I know you've spoken about corporate prisons for profit, and I'd like to make a couple statements about it. Well, of course, this is modern-day slavery, corporate slavery, and a large number of American youth of African descent are the victims of this with the war on drugs, and not only that, they lose their vote as well. But the thing is that an executive from one of these prisons for profit said that if there was a change in the war on drugs and immigration policies, they could lose their workforce. So this is America's answer to third world labor. And I feel that it's time to boycott the corporations that use this labor, this form of slavery, because they are reducing the, they're making their profit margin better, but they're using slave labor to do it, and in a sense, this is a slap in the face to tax-paying American workers and to unions. And I feel that one of the major offenders here is Wells Fargo Bank. They're one of the largest investors in prisons for profit, and I'm calling for a boycott of Wells Fargo to start with. And I think that's the way to go, because we have to fight fire with fire, and prisons for profit are just going to take us down the drain even faster.
I would agree with everything except your last statement. I don't believe we should fight fire with fire, because then everyone gets incinerated. I believe that an eye for an eye is a bad notion. But overall, to boycott any prison-made product, I would agree with if we're aware of it. But we have to make ourselves aware of it. So good idea. Let's buy American. Let's buy green. Let's buy sustainable. Let's buy that which a living wage was employed to manufacture the service or the product for us. Thank you. I appreciate that input, Harvey.
Thank you, Gary.
Carlos from Queens. Hi, Carlos. Hi, Carlos. Speak up. Carlos, is there? Not there? All right, we'll take another call. Jay from New York City. Jay, your turn. Jay, speak up. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Yeah, hi. Question about sugars. I found stevia to have a terrible aftertaste. I'm trying to have a healthy one. So what happens in your body with the various sugars, and what would you give as a kind of a top five if you're trying to cut out table sugar and find
okay,
that honey is much better than others?
Okay, good. Happy to answer that. First, stevia, when it's, there are different types of stevia, and there's actually stevia that has been enhanced with other tasters. So you can get stevia with cinnamon or other, like a maple stevia. So you can get it easily. For some people, if you use too much stevia, there will be a slightly bitter aftertaste. I don't find that to be a problem because I don't use a lot of it. But the palm sugar is very good. Date sugar is good. A coconut sugar is good. Xylitol in small amounts is very good. And even maple syrup, a whole lot of new research on it shows that the chemicals in maple syrup are extremely beneficial to the body. So those are some alternatives. And if you can get raw, untreated agave, then that's fine. That gives you six, all right? All the best to you. And let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have an email from someone here that said that you spoke about this some time ago. A bunch of ninth grade young women from Denmark recently created a science experiment that's causing a stir in the scientific community. It started with an observation and a question. The girls noticed that if they slept with their cell phones near their heads at night, they had difficulty concentrating at school the next day. So they wanted to test the effect of a cell phone's radiation on humans, but their school did not have the equipment to handle such an experiment. So what they ended up doing, Gary, was they took trays that had little sprouts in it, and they put one tray in one room that had that was not near a cell phone, and they put other trays into another room that had two routers. And the room that had the two routers in it by the cell phones ended up... Are you there?
Go ahead. Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
I don't know what that is. Are you there?
I can hear you, Luann.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so what happened was, obviously, the area with the sprouts that wasn't by the router grew beautifully. And the area that was by the routers, by the cell phones, the sprouts didn't grow at all. So that's some pretty interesting information.
I would agree with that. The feedback you got is because my engineer has to disconnect the last caller, so I'm going to ask
him. Okay, I see.
Please do that. Here's the issue. Electromagnetic pulses that come from computers, laptops, for example, your cell phone, and other forms of, like a microwave oven. You should never be within 8 feet of a microwave oven. I don't believe you should be eating anything out of a microwave oven, but just being near it. When people are in the kitchen and they have the microwave on, they're getting the same phenomena. Being close to a television will do the same thing. You're getting a pulse. And there are meters you can buy. They're not expensive. And you can take them around your home and see whether you're in a safe or non-safe zone. And the cell phone is one of the ones that will take it to a high level of irritating, agitating, and inflaming your neurons and chromosomes. And I believe that we're going to see, if they test it, that the telomeres and telomerase are adversely affected, which means that it could be speeding up the cellular aging of the brain. I believe that we're going to see a massive, massive epidemic of abnormalities of the brain, the skull, including cancers, and it's already starting. Over 28 separate independent scientific studies show there's a danger to the brain from cell phones. So if you're going to use a cell phone, then use it on speaker at least 2 feet from the body. And never, ever sleep near a cell phone, because the electromagnetic pulse, even though the phone, you're not using it, the pulse is still there, and that's going right into the brain, and that will hit the pineal gland, and that will impact melatonin, and that means you're not going to be waking up rested and revitalized. And melatonin is essential for your immune system. So that's why you have so many teenagers today going to school, and they're tired because they have not had a good night's sleep. And no small reason, because they haven't been able to get away from their computer or their cell phone, and they're almost addicted to them, and that's causing them severe brain chemical problems. Okay, and if you want to see this, get yourself a simple meter. It only costs 100 and some bucks. go around your house, put it by everything you have, and then put it by your cell phone. When your cell phone is on, you're talking over it. Then look up the scientific literature of how much impulse you just got and what that means to your overall health. The amount of safe cell phone you could use in a week is under 120 seconds. 2 minutes. 2 minutes per week. And that'll give you an idea of how an interesting technology has been misused, and we haven't been told the truth, and these studies have been denied by the industry because it's a huge multi-billion dollar industry. Thanks for your call, Luann Panessi. And Luann, by the way, takes the calls and emails from people. Luann, give them the information so people who, all the new people, certainly, who would like to reach out to you, who have questions for me, so I can address them.
Surely. You can email me at whnn@aol.com, whnn@aol.com, or you can call me at my home office, which is 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198.
Thank you, Luann. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen. And remember, tonight, 7 p.m., go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, or if you're out and about and you want to listen over the telephone, just dial 619-550-0869, 619-550-0869. Got a powerful Progressive Commentary Hour coming to you. Have a nice day, everyone. Now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, 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 Gary. Today we're talking about Edward Snowden. There's still unanswered questions about Edward Snowden, but in his own words, he describes his thinking.
Okay, we look forward to it right now. And then we're going to ask Utrice Lead, in her own words, she tells us what she's thinking. Utrice Lead.
Thank you,
Gary. The magic wizardry and alchemy coming in 1 minute.